You're dysregulated, so you're moving out of that restoration state. Adrenaline, cortisol, go, go, go. And you start to live in your sympathetic nervous system. Sympathetic overdrive. Mobile phones, the internet. I'm not going to make this all about technology being the enemy, but the pace of life started speeding up. You know, you work to your job. You can't say, I'm struggling, I'm exhausted, I'm falling off the edge. I don't think we can do things like that anymore.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the No Stress Podcast. I'm here today with Dr. Narina Ramlakhan, and we're going to be talking about sleep, stress, stress resilience, and the connection between the two. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Abby. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and really, I love sleep. So this is, I'm really looking forward to talking to you about this and learning more from you. So Dr. Narina has a track record of, I think, over 25 years.
We're heading for 30 years. I'm not giving my age away, but we are heading for 30 years.
So nearly 30 years as a sleep expert. You're a sleep physiologist?
Yes. Well, I'm a neurophysiologist, and I started out really after my academic work, started off in health screening in the city, in Moorgate, measuring the health of city professionals and people from banks and law firms and places like that. And I started to craft a trade around helping people to sleep, because behind all of this, I was having issues sleeping myself. So I sort of got this reputation for being a sleep expert, but really I was helping people to manage stress and their energy levels and burnout. But yeah, I seem to have got a name for being a sleep expert.
Brilliant. And you've got books as well. You've written, I think, four books?
Yes, I've written four books. And the first one I wrote was Tired But Wired. So I was headhunted to work at a clinic in the city, a psychiatric clinic called the Capio Nightingale Clinic. And it was while I was working there with people who had severe sleep problems that I realized that I had a methodology that was really robust. I needed to share it. And that gave me the confidence to write my first book, Tired But Wired. And that kind of catapulted me out there into the world, ended up on some TV shows and places like that. And then I wrote another three books after that.
When you talk about this concept of tired but wired,
yeah,
it's something that we can dig into a little bit more as we go through this conversation. But what does that look like? How do you know you're tired?
Yeah, I mean, you're a good sleeper, Abby, aren't you? So I don't know if you can relate to this, but tired but wired, it can manifest in a few ways. So let's take the first one. You get into bed, you're exhausted from your day, but you cannot drop down into a state of physical rest. Your brain is going crazy. There could be snippets of the day. There could be the noise of the day, even songs, you know, conversations. Your mind is in overdrive, overwhelm. And this could also be in your body. So there could be a somatic manifestation, somatic meaning of the body, soma of the body, with restlessness. And some people say they can't stop moving and they're turning to, but they just cannot find that stillness. But that is absolutely vital. Stillness of mind, stillness of body is absolutely vital in order to be able to restore yourself. So, or on the other hand, some people get into bed and they have that, and it then continues seemingly for the whole night. Or some people fall asleep exhausted and then wake in the early hours with that agitation, which can manifest as physical, as noise in the brain, or physical restlessness. Mm. Horrible.
It is horrible.
Just especially can't switch off and relax.
3 a.m. wake up as well that can happen. What goes on with that? Because I know a lot of people struggle with that sudden alertness.
Really good question. And I'm glad you've asked this right at the top of the show, because this will help a lot of people. First of all, let me say that the waking in around that time between 2 and 4 a.m. is actually quite normal. And most of us do. So around 2 to 4 a.m., we'll get something of a cortisol spike. Cortisol is known as, you know, it gets a bit of a bad rap, the stress hormone. But it is normal for even the urban hunter-gatherer. You know, we're still hunter-gatherers in our physiology, in our physiological design. But the urban hunter-gatherer will wake up then, because the hunter-gatherer brain, the caveman, cavewoman brain, might be thinking, you've had enough sleep, now it's time to go hunter-gathering. Mm. So the brain and our physiology is designed to wake us up then, to come into a state of kind of alertness, semi-alertness, check that the cave is safe and make a decision, discern, is it safe for me to go back to sleep? Yes, it is. Everything's safe. let me go back to sleep. But for a lot of people, they trick mind and body into thinking it's not safe because they reach for the phone and they look at the phone. What's the time? Just the mere act of checking the time takes the brain into neurologically a more heightened state of consciousness. So it's harder to climb back down into a state of rest. In other words, you wake yourself up more. You wake up, you look at your phone, you're fretting. You then kick into rumination, worrying about the past or catastrophizing, worrying about the future or the tired but wired. So can you see it's a whole spiral that takes place as a result of something that was actually probably quite normal.
Which is quite reassuring, I think.
It is. It is reassuring. And I spend a lot of time in my work showing people how to avoid getting into that vortex, that spiral, and how to bring themselves back gently into the body again with some really simple techniques. Really simple.
And I'd love to hear some of those techniques as we go through. And I'm sure all of our listeners want to know what are some tips that they can
absolutely
they can
let's do that.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. So when you are tired and wired, the behaviors come through in terms of the overthinking and how you maybe are having restless legs and all sorts of things. What is going on in the body? What's going on in the nervous system when you are in that state?
Yeah. So what we're looking at, and I write about this quite a lot in my books, particularly in the most recent one, Finding Inner Safety, where I talk about the nervous system. And I know that a big focus for your podcast is on the nervous system. So what happens is that the nervous system, when we're tired but wired, it goes into a state of dysregulation. Dysregulation meaning it's out of sync, it's out of regulation. And, you know, I remember from one of the very few lectures I actually made it to when I was at university decades ago, studying homeostasis and the workings of the autonomic nervous system and the kind of the fact that we pendulate or we move back and forth between branches of the nervous system or the autonomic nervous system. One leg of the nervous system is to do with safety, restoration, deep restoration, sleep, digestion, immune function, sexual function. That's the parasympathetic. And then on the other hand, you have the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight, threat, stress, adrenaline, cortisol. Go, go, go. And when we're in tired but wired, you're dysregulated. So you're moving out of that restoration state and you start to live in your sympathetic nervous system, sympathetic overdrive. So you lose this ability to pendulate beautifully and normally and naturally, and you start to live in survival mode. And, you know, I have a particular interest in neurodivergence. We chatted about it before, for personal and professional reasons. And I see a lot of dysregulation in certain neurodivergent profiles and ADHD and autism. And I do a lot of work in this area to help people learn how to regulate themselves back into a good state of balance where the nervous system is pendulating normally and they can access those states of rest.
Sleep is one of those things that is seen as a hygiene factor. People think, I breathe, I sleep, I eat. They don't think about how they do it well a lot of the time, or they assume that it's just something that's an extra sometimes. What would you say to people who kind of deprioritize sleep over things like exercise and nutrition and everything else?
Well, I'd say you're a damn fool. Sorry.
I love sleep.
That's just what I say as it is, you know. I've been observing this since the 1990s, Abby, where back in that little health screening clinic in Moorgate in the Square Mile, in London Square Mile, I noticed that we were heading towards an epidemic of sleep problems because mobile phones, the internet, and I'm not going to make this all about technology being the enemy, but the pace of life started speeding up. And so the urban hunter-gatherer was being stretched to their neurological and physiological limits. And we thought the technology would make life easier. But in fact, we started trying to push more into less time. And I started observing back then, you know, these city workers taking slices off their sleep, sleep becoming the nice to have, nice to do thing. And I remember, in the early 2000s being interviewed by the Independent about a banker. He died in the shower. He had an epileptic seizure. Mm. He'd worked for 72 hours in a stretch, no sleep. And he had an epileptic seizure. And the workplace was supporting that kind of behavior. So now we've got a little bit, there's more awareness now. You know, we've had various court cases going through the courts and health and safety legislation and employee rights and wellness is well and truly on the agenda, whereas back then I was pushing against closed doors. But there is still this mythical belief that we can take slices off our sleep if we just take more supplements or if we just get the latest kit. Not surprisingly, the sleep industry, says she, sporting a nice ring here, the sleep industry is worth billions of dollars, billions of pounds globally. We're obsessed with kit and I've got a lot of it.
Yeah.
I get sent stuff. And some of it can help, but it won't touch the sides until we as human beings, we start to wise up about the intelligence of our nervous system and our physiology, the design of our physiology, and start to work with it in a way that aligns with what's going on in the world. You know, I think we're allowing the external pace of life to drive us outside in. Mm. It needs to be inside out.
Yeah.
You know, listen deeply to what your body is telling you and then respond to life.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And I do think it's great to have things which can supplement and support.
Yeah,
you.
Totally.
But the underlying message is that we need to kind of do the work ourselves as well to make sure we set up for success.
And we need to do the real work, I call it, the real work. Sometimes yeah. involves going right back into your history and sometimes working with trauma, big T, because all of that can sit in the nervous system.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that earlier, actually, just thinking about how things can be reinforced in terms of your identity as well. So even city workers, I used to work in the city myself and in banking, and there definitely was a focus on do the work, well-being and looking after your sleep and everything else comes second. And I was with a client just this week and they were saying, well, when it's out of performance and well-being, we're just going to go with the performance every time, which
yeah.
still happens.
Yes.
What would you say to leaders of companies, to people who make decisions about teams, about how they can maybe take sleep more seriously?
In today's world, and the state of chaos that our world is in, and I'm not just talking about all of the horrific wars and horrible things happening to people in underprivileged areas. I'm also talking about the state of our economy. I believe that leaders can no longer afford to run things using the old rules. We need to adapt. I mean, they need to adopt new ways of doing things. And I am running some programs and doing some keynotes this year. One of them is called Leader as Healer, which is about, you know, your leader has the nervous system that will create the culture of the organization. So if your leaders are highly dysregulated and running in sympathetic overdrive and running in fight or flight, that is the kind of business and culture that they're going to create, one that's driven by fear. And I'd walk into lots of glass and chrome, swanky buildings in the city, go through the revolving doors, and the smell of fear was palpable. You have these city workers who are told, come here, earn lots of money. We will massage you at your desk. We will feed you food so you can stay late, employee perks and benefits. And you work till you drop because you can't say, I'm struggling, I'm exhausted, I'm falling off the edge. I don't think we can do things like that anymore. I think also there's a paradigm shift that's happening where we've got younger people in the workplace, new generations who have a different set of values, expectations, beliefs. Their spirituality is different. They don't want to work like that anymore. Mm. So if your leaders of tomorrow want the competitive advantage, they need to work on themselves. Mm. And they need to work on themselves and do that real work to create within themselves that energy, the nervous system of the leader who is safe, who is balanced, who is regulated, and exudes that energy in a way that people can feel. It's palpable. You know, when you're with somebody who is safe in themselves and they're genuine, you can feel it in their aura. You can feel it in their presence. And, you know, you and I are co-regulating with each other at the moment. Mm. I don't feel stressed with you. Mm. I feel very relaxed. So as human beings, we're doing this all the time. Mm. And every space we go into, we create around us a morphogenetic field. This is measurable, an electrical field around us. So when you're around somebody who's got shitty energy,
yeah,
you're going to feel it. And you create that around you in your teams. And people are not going to want to stay there too long, or they're going to get sick. and have to leave. So we now, there is a duty of care that goes beyond what just what the government says or the health and safety. It is, you will have palpable black and white evidence of people not liking your energy. They will leave if you don't work on yourself. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer to your question.
Brilliant. It's a really good message as well, because I think this is the thing that sometimes doesn't get through to some people, especially when some of our audience might be listening thinking, I want to sleep more, but my boss is saying I need to work late, or I need to come in really early, or work the weekend or whatever. And so it's good to hear from an expert saying this actually doesn't work. And in things like decision-making, how does sleeping well affect decision-making? Because there are lots of studies around if you don't sleep enough, it's like being over the alcoholic limits like these. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. When we don't sleep well, it affects us in so many ways, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, I believe. But if we look at cognitively, the prefrontal cortex, the working memory is affected by poor sleep. And poor sleep, that's happening night after night, chronically poor sleep. And measurably, it affects decision making. It affects our ability to solve problems, to be creative, to compute using different parts of the brain. The hippocampus starts to work more it starts to dysregulate as well. And we start to live more in the amygdala, the reptilian part of the brain, which is your fight or flight. So your judgment becomes survivalist, snappy. Your short-term memory starts to go. You lose the ability to remember, to learn, to make these connections, these creative connections between different parts of the brain. And I do believe that businesses and the state of business, it's a competitive advantage now. When people are well rested, when leaders are well rested, they can show up as their best selves at work. And they cannot rely on short-term fixes, energy drinks, caffeine, and worse. You know,
And it's I saw something recently about exercise and looking after yourself from a physical perspective being a sign of status nowadays. I'm wondering if sleep will go in that direction, where people start to think if that person is not relying on Red Bull or energy drinks, not running around chaotically, not emotional when they're making decisions, do I see that leader as more, or that person as more in control, more proficient, more effective in what they do? Would you say that?
I think so. And I'm seeing more of this emerging on the scene, the new leader, the new way of leadership, and more role models as well. You know, I'm involved with a consultancy where new leaders, younger leaders, are being kind of mentored and honed and coached in terms of their attributes and their traits. And in fact, I'll be talking to them about leader as healer. And speaking at the London School of Economics later in the year as well about the same thing. So I think that this kind of narrative about, you know, how do we look after ourselves? What does it mean to look after ourselves? So that there's no longer this kind of let's bully our way through it. Let's run on bravado energy. It's just not sustainable. And it's interesting that we talk globally about sustainable energy, but we need to also drill down, because we are a microcosm of a macrocosm, each of us as human beings. And so sustainable energy from a personal point of view is about living and running from the right part of your nervous system. You know, and I talk about this in my keynotes and my workshops, the right energy, which is from that parasympathetic, the vagus nerve, the safety part of your nervous system. And that is sustainable. That gives you the right kind of energy to keep going. And then you stop and you restore. Whereas survival energy is short, sharp bursts of energy. You need your Red Bull, but it's not sustainable. And then you get to a point where you crash.
And why do you think so many people who are high achievers, or just general population, why do you think so many people struggle with getting enough sleep and prioritizing this, given it's so important?
One of the answers is this four-letter word that begins with F, fear, you know?
I went to the other one.
Yeah, you went to the other one. You know, when people are afraid, and sometimes they don't realize, let's make this personal. Sometimes we do not realize that we're running on a kind of fear that says we can't stop. And you look at things like rest. You know, I've done a TED talk on rest called Come to Work and Rest. And I had this vision when I did this TED talk during the pandemic, actually, that the enlightened organization would invite me to come and run a campaign. Come to work and rest. Let's encourage our employees to rest periodically, to take intermittent recovery. But what can happen is that, you know, even if you're given an opportunity to rest, sometimes we don't stop because we have an underlying narrative of I have to keep going. Mm-hmm. I have to do, must do, should do. So we need to think about this on a personal level, as well as on an organizational and a leadership level as well. Each of us needs to step into the center of our circle of responsibility and think, why is it that I am not taking responsibility for my health, for my well-being, for my sleep? Why am I not prioritizing? What is the narrative that's telling me I can't stop, I have to keep going? What is the narrative that's telling me I can't stop and have breakfast? You know, we're preparing ourselves to sleep from the minute we wake up in the morning until the time we get into bed at night. So it's not just about making the decision about going to bed a bit earlier in the evening. It's about the choices we're making from the time we wake up in the morning. Can I make time to look after myself when I wake up, to actually eat breakfast? Or am I going to grab a cup of coffee on the way to the train station? Or even if I'm working from home, I haven't got time, I have to keep going. What are we telling ourselves? And a lot of people don't realize that they're running on a baseline level of fear and adrenaline.
How do you know that you are? What would be the signs and symptoms?
I love your questions. I really do.
Probably just because I'm curious for myself.
Yeah. I like to keep things simple. Not that I think your audience is stupid. I know that people are highly intelligent, but we're so overwhelmed these days with the volume of information, which is also one of the answers to your previous question. Miseducation. I think people are doing the wrong thing with sleep, and I'd like to bust through some myths today. But, you know, there's so much utter shite on certain social media platforms. And I get told these things because my Gen Z tells me, and she says, "Mom, is this true? Is this true?" So that's one part of the thing. So let me just summarize that, the technique again. How do you know if you're running on fear? And a lot of this, the first step is awareness. So first thing in the morning when you wake up, listen to the speed of your thoughts, listen to the quality of your thoughts. And how do you do this? You don't have to lie there for half an hour or sit there in meditation or anything like that, or get an app or whatever. Just keep it simple. Put one hand over your heart, put one on your belly, or put both on your belly, whatever. Keep your eyes closed and just listen to what's going on in there. Follow a few breaths. Maybe just go in, out, just silently. Just breathe. Follow those breaths and listen to what your brain is saying, and listen to the speed of what your brain is telling you. And then you'll know if you're running on that anxiety energy, or if you're thinking, oh, this is so nice to lie here, then you're safe. You're not running on anxiety. It's really so simple, but that can set you on the right trajectory, because when we don't listen, we're not unaware, and you run from that survival energy, jump out of bed, haven't got time for breakfast, grab the coffee, run. And you get to the end of the day and wonder why you're tired but wired, as opposed to, let me just breathe. Okay, this is what's going on. Let me just slow the breath down. We could talk about breath, if you like, a simple technique later, but keep it simple, but pay attention. The intelligence is in the body. You just need to notice it.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And from what you've said, it sounds like this self-awareness is the key thing there, having that pause.
It is. In Tired But Wired, I talk about this. I call it the ARC, A-R-C. The arc of transformation: awareness, take responsibility, make the right choices. So when we become aware, we stand at the center of our lives, we take responsibility, and we then make the right choices. And that's when you start to see the transformation. Ah, I'm aware, my thoughts are going. Let me take responsibility for this. What am I going to do differently? I think I really need to skip that coffee this morning because everything's running in overdrive. Let me eat something. Let me pay attention to my breath. Actually, this morning, I do need to go to the gym. Or I'm just going to slow down, notice my feet on the ground, take that into my meetings with me, be more present.
That's really nice. And the R is probably one of the most significant parts. We need to, as individuals, recognize that we have a choice. We can do something
about
it.
We do have the choice. And I see a lot of people who feel they don't have any choice. If you think about, probably a little cheesy, but the word responsibility. It's your ability to respond in a given set of circumstances. How can I respond right now? So I'm noticing right now that my right foot is going a bit numb. What can I do right now? I can do that. I can put both feet on the ground, or I could swap. I could wiggle my toes. I have a myriad of choices that I can make even in an interview. I can stop, I can slow down. There's so many choices that we can make. And this is survival energy. We feel constrained by life. We feel pressed down by life. I have no choice. It's my manager. It's the organizational culture. And of course, there are layers of responsibility. If we stand at the center of our lives and slow it down, inside out, we'll notice that we have choices. Then there's a response. There's another outer ring, which is, you know, the responsibility of the manager, the responsibility of the culture of the team. Outside that, there's a responsibility of the leader of the organization. And then there are concentric circles of responsibility. But at the core, you have the individual. We have choice.
Mm. And that's really empowering, I think, because a lot of people, again, don't feel like they have that. And going on to, I guess, misconceptions around sleep and recovery and why it's important, how much control we have. Just what are some of the misconceptions that you see in your clients and the companies that you work with and so on?
Well, the big one, I'll sleep when I die. I can't remember who said that. Somebody famous, you might know. I'll sleep when I die. You know, I don't need it. I can get by on blah, blah, blah. You know, just last night I was invited to co-present on a webinar and there was a lady there and she said, you know, I go to bed quite late and then I wake up at 4 a.m. and I feel absolutely fine. I just run on, you know, I've got loads of energy. And I said, hang on a second, you may well do, and you might be one of these people who doesn't need a lot of sleep. Famously, throughout the ages, there are people who didn't need much sleep, and they're amazingly prolific in their output, you know, their productivity. But let's just find out. Let's ask a few questions. And it turned out she had all these health problems. And it also, when I dug a bit deeper, I could see that she was running on survival energy. So people think just because they've got high energy, fear is an amazing energizer, you know? Do you remember when you were back at school and you're on the start line of your sports day and you're like, ooh, adrenaline. It's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of energy, but it's not sustainable, you know? So people think they've got a lot of energy, but is it the right kind of energy? So that's the one thing, you know, I don't need sleep. I can get by on it. And this lady became aware and she's actually signed up for one of my sleep webinars at the end of the month, which is great. The other thing is I shouldn't be waking up during the night. And of course, we have the wonderful world of wearable tech, which might tell us we woke so many times last night. Now, if we dig a bit deeper into the data, and I've been wearing a ring for 5 years, I know my data quite well now. I don't really look at things like that. I look at restoration. I look at, okay, after that podcast with Abby, what was my restoration data like? Oh, brilliant. I was in deep restoration while talking to her. How great. She's a great interviewer. I felt really relaxed. That's nice. But people look at things like I woke so many times during the night and they think that's a problem. No, that it is normal to wake during the night. Just like I said, it's normal to wake between 2 and 4. You don't want to stay awake and not be able to get back to sleep. But know that micro awakenings during the night are normal. If we didn't have those, we'd probably be extinct as a species. Mm. You probably would have been gobbled up
That's true. Deep sleep. Old
saber-toothed tiger. So we've evolved with this oscillating between deep sleep, semi-sleep states, full alertness. Now, hopefully we don't come into beta wave, full alertness. We come up into theta, alpha. We go to the loo. We come back. That's another myth. People think, you know, I woke so, you know, twice last night to go to the loo. Okay, that's normal. Don't make a story about it. You went to the loo twice. Well done. You know, you went 3 times? Okay. Now, if you're having other symptoms, we don't need to get into that because that's not what this podcast is about. But if you're having other uncomfortable symptoms, maybe you need to go to your medical practitioner and get some sort of test to work out what your nocturnal enuresis is all about. But know that it's normal to wake up during the night. And sometimes anxiety makes us go to the loo more. Actually, detox makes it. I notice that if I spend a day in a spa, I can be up weeing quite a lot during the night because my body's detoxing. You know, so sometimes we take these bits of information and we extrapolate to a kind of truth that's really not helpful.
Mm.
So please know that it's normal to wake during the night. It's often the behaviors that we indulge in and the stories that we create around that, that fuels a kind of anxiety. you know. There's a form of insomnia called orthosomnia, O-R-T-H-O, somnia, which is the poor sleep that arises as a result of your typical professional services employee, type A, driven, perfectionistic personality, over-measuring their data and believing it all and trying to get better and better. And they've got some kind of bloody three-dimensional spreadsheet mapping their data from back in the day, you know, and they're trying to get better and better. And that creates anxiety. And there's a reason why sleep CBT, you know, is an important field in helping people to sleep better. Understand how your cognitions and your behaviors are sabotaging your sleep. The fact that you're going to bed thinking, I need to get better sleep tonight. I mustn't wake up. I must get so many hours of REM sleep, so many hours of deep sleep. My readiness data compared to Fred, you know, is so much lower. One of my best friends at the moment, she got an Oura ring 2 weeks ago. She's quite competitive. If she listens to this, she'll have a laugh. She won't tell me what her data is because she thinks it's a competition. It's not a bloody competition.
Yeah.
You know?
People do think there's an optimal, everyone's optimizing now. Yeah. I think that's the challenge. And that in itself becomes a saboteur when you're, it's like you say,
orthosomnia. Another important one, which is sleep timing. And, you know, people get so hung up on the 7 or 8 hours of sleep. I must get 7 or 8 hours of sleep. And they're still exhausted because, you know, they might be getting that sleep, but the phasing and the timing of the sleep isn't quite right. I have something that's famously called my non-negotiables, my five non-negotiables, which are the five things that, you know, if you're listening to this and you're going, God, my sleep is effed. I really need to do something about it. Start with Dr. Narina's five non-negotiables. It sounds like I'm being a bully and a bit kind of like, oh, who's she to tell me? But these five things, based on my 30 plus years of experience, they will start to reset your nervous system and help you to get back into a state of regulation. But one of these is around sleep timing. The fourth one is around sleep timing. So a lot of people get fixated on 7 or 8 hours and they think, I can go to bed at 1 a.m. and just wake up at 8 or 9, or I can go to bed at, you know, midnight. And, but you know, actually the sleep before midnight, and there's some really interesting data. First Beat Technologies did some data. You might want to have a chat to them at some point. We did a webinar together last year. First Beat Technologies show that people who go to bed before midnight, and they measured this with electrodes and looking at heart coherence and heart rate variability, good science, shows that people going to bed before midnight, and in my methodology, I recommend around 9:30, 10-ish, going to bed resting before midnight, they have more restorative sleep throughout the night. So it's not just about hours, it's your quality of sleep. And it's the phasing. When you go to bed earlier, you give yourself a better chance of getting that deep restoration.
So that is so important, because a lot of people just assume 8 hours is 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And something as simple as just shifting to 10 p.m, yep, wake up a little bit earlier, maybe, or later, makes a huge difference. What about napping? And also, I'm curious about shift workers.
Napping. You can see a big smile on my face now, rolling up my sleeves. So there is some good research. So from circadian science, that shows that if you look at the architecture or the design of our sleep, we are designed to be more polyphasic innately than monophasic. Mono meaning one sleep phase. We're awake all day, go to bed at night, and we sleep. Or there is even research that shows that hunter-gatherer tribes, we've evolved with this biphasic sleep. So we might even wake during the night. And there's still some hunter-gatherer tribes in Africa where they wake in the early hours when their prey might be resting and therefore more vulnerable. And they go hunter-gathering. So they get their first phase of sleep as the light levels drop below about 200 lux. That's the unit of measure of sleep. They go to bed nice and early in their mat of leaves in the cave, and then they wake in the early hours and go out hunter-gathering, catch the vulnerable prey. So it gives them an evolutionary advantage. Mm. Now, if you dig into monophasic, biphasic, polyphasic, poly meaning many, if you look at the oscillation, the design of our physiology, so we've heard of the circadian cycle, the 24-hour clock. We expend energy, we recover energy in sleep. You've got this sinusoidal rhythm. Within this, and I talk about this in my TED talk, you've got the hum of your energy, the wiggle of your energy roughly about a 90-minute cycle. It's called the ultradian cycle. This is the hum of your energy, the hum. So we expend energy. We feel, I need to eat something, or I need another cup of coffee, or I need a cigarette. I feel sleepy. I can't concentrate. Actually, that's a sign that you need to do something unrelated to the previous task. You need to seek rest, ideally in a good way, not just pick your phone up and try and get a dopamine hit to wake you up, but get a cigarette or another cup of coffee, but move, breathe, like we just did when we took a break. So when we become attuned to the hum, the wiggle of your energy, you might start to notice that you have these peaks and troughs in your energy, which are quite normal. And many people are very attuned to the post-lunch dip. That one is quite obvious. They get quite tired and they might even want to have a nap then. But actually, if we paid attention throughout the day, you'd see that built into our physiological design is a propensity, a natural propensity to seek rest and intermittent recovery every 90 minutes or so. It's quite normal. Now, I'm not saying to your worker, you know, lie down under your desk and sleep for 2 hours mid-morning, because they'll never have me in there again to work. I'm just saying, get away from your desk for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Walk around the building, breathe. Don't take your phone with you. Go and get your sandwich. Don't take your phone. Don't stand in the queue on your phone. You know, you even see it in people driving these days. They're in traffic. As soon as they hit the traffic, they're on their phone, which of course is dangerous and illegal, you know, but we have this natural oscillation. Now, there are notably athletes who have leveraged this propensity for intermittent recovery by building naps into ultra endurance events.
Yes.
So famously, so this is one of the first athletes where they actually measured. So there was a scientist called Dr. Claudio Stampi. He was working at the chronobiology unit in Boston. When Ellen MacArthur was a sailor, she set the world record in 2000, forgetting the numbers, 2002 or 3. She sailed solo and set a world record, the Vendée Globe. So she was sailing solo around the world, and she set a world record of about 70 odd days. And during that time had 380 odd naps. Her longest period of sleep in those 70 odd days was about 36 minutes. She was wearing an actigraph, clunky piece of equipment, which downloaded information to the chronobiology unit in Boston. And it was looking at her periods of rest and activity. And they were advising her, okay, you're starting frontal lobes getting a bit fried. You need to rest. So she was oscillating between rest and activity. Now, I'm not saying to people, you know, push the boat out now in your professional services firm and start napping. There's too many people doing that kind of thing, but in a very dysfunctional way. I mean, if you look at the footage of her race at the end, she emotionally was a basket case by the end of it, with respect, Dame Ellen MacArthur, you know, but she won.
Yes.
So this is the amazing potential of the human spirit and human physiology if we learn how to work with it intelligently. So in other words, we're built to nap.
And napping, I did read that NASA had done a study on napping, the optimal time for a nap. If you go beyond it, it's not great, pushes you over.
Yes, yeah.
What, if you want to share with our audience
your thoughts on that? So I've done a lot of work with shift workers, police services, emergency services, NHS workers. And I was married, second marriage to a police officer as well. Sorry, we're not here to talk about my relationship life, but that's a whole other story. But shift workers, there's different types of naps. In its simplest form, you've got the power nap, which is anything up to 20 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes. We could sit here like this. We're not going to do this. We haven't got time. But closing your eyes, you're not sleeping. Eyes are closed. You're comfortable. Ideally sitting or lying, not standing, obviously not operating machinery, and you are taking yourself dropping down into a state of relaxation. And you may be aware of thoughts, noises, but actually you might not even think you're resting. But if you were to wire up to a EEG or a polysomnograph, probably you're dropping down into an alpha state, you know, meditative state. The more you practice doing that, the better you'll get at doing power naps. So power napping, ideally at some point between 2 and 4 p.m., no later than that, because then it eats into your sleep drive. You build up a sleep drive throughout the day, so you sleep better at night. Don't do this later than 4 p.m. Some point between 2 and 4 p.m., no more than 20 minutes. Okay, the next level of napping is the replacement nap, up to 40 minutes. Who does this? If you're aware that you're becoming exhausted, new mum, new parents, not getting enough sleep at night, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, dealing with health when I was working with women with breast cancer. Next week, I'll be working with shift workers, trauma physicians and surgeons. I'll be talking about napping to them. So you're going up to 40 minutes, no longer. Then you're starting to go in deeper. You're starting to touch the light sleep and a little bit beyond stages. You will have the subjective experience of, oh, I'm asleep. You'll come out of it feeling like you've slept. Your immune system gets a bit of a boost. Cognitive processing, the working memory is emptied. You come out of it smarter, cleverer. Same with power nap, actually. Measurably, cognitive performance scores increases after a 20-minute nap.
Mm-hmm.
Third nap, you're talking for shift workers. Prophylactic naps. Get into bed, sleep for as long as you can. Don't measure it.
Interesting.
Get into bed and sleep. You come off your night shift, eat something so that your blood sugar levels are stable. Get into bed, blackout blinds, put a fan in the room, particularly if, you know, something that makes white noise so that if you've got your recycling trucks coming around on that day, it's not going to wake you up. You rest, focus on resting. Every time you wake up, go back and you sleep for as long as you can. And if you're going back on a night shift, you might wake up again, go eat something, come back. Maybe you'll get to bed again, rest, you drop into a replacement nap again, you know. So when I work with shift workers, we go into all of the kind of different types of naps and how to do it without worrying. And also flight crew as well, really important for them.
Yes, because there's so much involved in terms of people knowing I need to sleep overnight, but for shift workers, it's really tough, isn't it?
And this is where, you know, leveraging the power of polyphasic napping and knowing that we have this innate, inherent ability to actually drop down into states of rest and receive rest. And this, as human beings, we need to get better at this. I became very sick in my early 30s. Full disclosure, I had a psychosis. I was sectioned, the psychiatric unit, where I, years later, ended up working for 10 years. This is the magic of, you know, my mess is my message, actually. Please use that line.
I like that. Yeah,
I know, right? I couldn't rest. For as a baby, I was extremely restless. I could not. My mom was taking me from one doctor to the next. I couldn't sleep. Agitation was my first name. And I got to the age of 31 and basically blew up. And 3 or 4 years in and out of hospital, medicated, clinical labels, until eventually I now know that I'm on some kind of spectrum. But I know how to manage it. But rest was not safe. And this fundamentally is why people cannot rest. Even when they go on holiday sometimes, or by the time they get to holiday, they're sick. They crash. You know, people cannot receive rest because rest, you know, particularly if you've had complex trauma. And I'm sure Dr. Gabor Maté talks about this. But when we've had a lot of trauma, and I come from a lot of complex trauma in my background because of my ancestry as well, rest feels very unsafe. Hunter-gatherers thinking, if I stop, I'm going to get attacked. It is not safe for me to rest. And so there's a lot of people walking around in a state of dissociation and inability to drop into the safety part of the nervous system that will enable them to access rest because it doesn't feel safe. So not surprisingly, it doesn't matter how many blackout blinds, aromatherapy, oils and candles, the best beds, you know, duvets, all of that stuff, kit to the hilt. But they are fundamentally unable to receive rest. And this is where the deep work lies.
And your book, your latest book,
Finding Inner Safety,
is about,
goes
into that.
Finding Inner Safety is my fourth book. It's the book I always wanted to write, but the world wasn't ready for it. They weren't ready to talk about safety science. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I wanted to talk about safety science and the nervous system and polyvagal theory and regulating the nervous system. Now it's all over the place, including social media, not always in accurate ways. But Finding Inner Safety is an amazing book, but the bridges were the first books which were all about sleep, because at the core of it, we sleep when we feel safe. Being able to sleep is about feeling safe, living in the right part of your nervous system. Can I give you five tips, my 5 non-negotiables, which will help your listeners. It'll give them a fighting chance. If this, it is only the top layer of my methodology. It's only the first step. It's not my whole kit, right? But do these things for the next 14 to 21 days if you're having problems sleeping, if you've got a lot of complex trauma, big T, little T, or perimenopausal, menopausal, chronic fatigue, if there's anything going on with your energy and sleep, your nervous system, do these 5 things for the next 14 to 21 days and then turn around and thank Abby and me and Pulsetto. Right, these 5 things. Number 1, stop skipping breakfast. Stop listening to misinformation that says intermittent fast. Okay? You need to tell the hunter-gatherer first thing in the morning that it's living in a world that's safe and there's a good supply of food. You know, I got slated in the press for saying this decades ago. Now we have good science to back this up. People who eat breakfast have better energy, their nervous system's more regulated, they sleep better. Nutritious breakfast, protein, fat, carbohydrate, number 1. Number 2, do not use coffee as your substitute for food. It's going to slam you into the sympathetic nervous system. I love that your cameramen are laughing over there, your producers. Okay.
So guilty.
Have your cup of coffee. I had my mushroom adaptogenic coffee mid-morning after the dog walk, after the first breakfast. I had it with my second breakfast, the coffee. Number 3, hydrate. Make sure your brain, your biochemistry is juicy. You're well hydrated. Your electrolytes are all there. I even put electrolytes or lemon juice if you haven't got electrolytes, pinch of sea salt, natural sea salt. But, you know, hydrate the body so your sleep biochemistry works. Number 4, we talked about it. Get to bed earlier. Sleep timing. Stop going to bed after midnight. If you're going to a gym, that's an all-night gym, don't. You know, this is not going to be good for you. Go to bed earlier. You don't have to be in bed asleep at 9:30, but rest entrainment. And even if you do this 4 nights a week, if you can't do it every night, try and do it 4 nights a week. You'll start to notice that your sleep gets better, your energy. Number 5, get your freaking technology out of the bedroom. Get an old-fashioned device in your bedroom. Starts with C, ends in K. Abby, you're so rude. It's a clock. It's a clock.
Just putting words in my mouth.
Clock. Get a clock in your bedroom. Don't look at the clock. Don't look at the clock during the night because it brings you into full wakefulness and you can't get back to sleep. There's an inner stand-up comedian. Missed my career. So stop looking at the time during the night. Don't let the last thing you touch before you go to sleep be your phone. Don't let it be the first thing you touch, the first thing you reach for when you wake up. You know, devices are great, but we need to reassess our relationship, especially now that we've got the AI on the scene.
Yes, yeah.
Those are my 5 things.
Brilliant. Really, really powerful. And I think if people just do one of those things.
No, I want them to do all 5.
If they do all 5,
do 3,
incredible.
Do 3. Okay. Do the breakfast, do the caffeine, do the water.
Fantastic.
Oh God, do the go to bed earlier as well.
What time do you go to bed?
My sleep was effed 2 nights ago because I had 2 social things. One first thing in the morning, the puja that you saw on LinkedIn. And then I went to a book signing in Piccadilly in the evening. I felt terrible yesterday. I was so emotional. But last night I went to bed 8:30.
Oh, wow.
I was in bed. I was in bed. But for 1 hour, I was reading a book that is so traumatizing. It's brilliant. It's a bestseller. It's not what I should be reading. And I went to bed and I had really traumatic dreams.
Oh, no.
But lights out were at 9:30. I knew I needed that sleep. For you. I did it for you guys. Right. But sometimes when listening to myself, I really need to get into bed earlier. And then, you know what? If I don't sleep so well during the night, I'm not that hung up on it. When I've worked with professional athletes, notably name drop, Chelsea Football Club, some of the footballers there. And I say the night before a big game or something, if you haven't slept, get over yourself. You are so resilient. You are so resilient. And I know you've talked to experts in the sports and resilience and military field as well. One night of bad sleep is not going to kill us, you know? Mm. And I used to run marathons and do triathlons and Ironman and all sorts of things. Rarely slept well the night before a marathon. Still pulled it out of the bag the next day because human beings are amazing and we need to believe that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Loved our conversation, Dr. Norina. And
me
thank
too.
You so much for sharing all your wisdom with us. Looking forward to hearing more from you as well. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you. It's been such a privilege. Thank you all. And thank you for your wonderful, wise questions.
Thank you so much. So we are at the end of today's episode. If you would like to find out more about Dr. Narina, you can check out the link in the show notes for more information about her and all the great work she is doing.